Greetings, everybody. Welcome to another adventure on the Andy and Amanda Show.
Yay!
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Andy, I have one question for you, darling.
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Do you have that Friday feeling?
I have that Friday feeling.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I do. It's another Friday show. I can't believe another one. We're headed towards the end of July here, middle of July, and times are moving. I can't believe it. You know, just going by so fast. It just seems like, you know, it's funny because we do these Friday shows, and it seems to me like they just, you know, just yesterday we did our last Friday show, and the last Friday before that, and the Friday before that, and the Friday before that. You know, what we really need to do, I think, is everybody
say orgasm loud.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, baby. So how you doing, Mr.
Right.
Kimball?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing real good.
My internet hubby?
My internet wife? I'm doing great. You know, just, you know, thinking about the Andy and Amanda Show all the time, conversations with you on the air and off, just wonderful. Great to have you as a friend and a co-host for all this time we've been doing the show. I think it's been over a year. We talked about after the last show about putting together some kind of anniversary and something. I got to figure out when that was, when you first joined the show with full time as the Andy and Amanda Show. It's about over a year ago now. I think it was June or July of last year, you know, but. And we were we were 5 days a week for a long time, and then went to three, which is working out actually better for I think our lives. Miss doing five sometimes, but you know, if we generated more, you know what, we probably could do five if somebody would write a check. Excuse me, if I didn't mean to.
It certainly makes the process more helpful, definitely.
It does.
We are executing on our plan.
Yes. Thank you, William, for elaborating on that. And we are. We truly are. We are executing our plan. So we have an exciting show today. We have a couple of different avenues that we're going to explore today, one being in the film, television, entertainment business, movie production, acting, the whole thing about, you know, producing movies. And we're going to talk to a guy who's recently produced a film. He's done others. We've had him on the show before, I think, a while back. I'm trying to remember. You know, it's funny because, as I was saying, hundreds of shows. We've got a lot of just terrific guests. Every single one of them, from Mark Lester, who played Oliver, to our
we had Dolores E. Jordan, Michael Jordan.
Dolores Jordan,
thank you. Lots of wonderful people.
We didn't have Ron Jeremy on the show. We just talked about him.
No.
He's never actually on yet. We're trying to get him on the show. Yeah. Oh, you know, got some other AVN news to talk about later in the show, which I'll talk
about.
Oh,
boy.
Yeah. Not you know, an established woman who has appeared in over 600 porn flicks was diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, being treated, living in her car. You know, 600 movies, doing well, a big fan audience, ended up her career living in her car here in California, and was found deceased in her car from a single gunshot wound. So I'll mention the Wireless Sky, I think. I'll go back to that a bit later. Yeah, and that's been, then you read about some of these folks. Not that I want to dive into that industry right now, but just real quick in passing, you read about some of these folks who have, you know, had their 15 minutes of flame, you know, more than 15 minutes of not flame, of fame. Did I say flame? Of fame. And they flame out. That's what I meant to say. They flame out and they go and you never hear from them again. And some of them have just lived these tragic lives after their experience. And some have made very, you know, great successes, have made a lot of money and have actually gone on to host radio shows and done different things. And some have gravitated towards, generic films, you know, out of the porn business. But many have had very tragic lives and have been outspoken about and warn people about the dangers of getting involved in that business, you know, because it can be very attractive and there can you can make a tremendous amount of money. There's billions, it's a multi-billion dollar industry. People are attracted to adult type of entertainment. And I'm not saying that in an unhealthy way. You know, I'm not saying, oh, you know, you got perverts who watch porn films, like couples, you know, man, woman just are into this, watch it, that does anything, just okay, it's kind of cool, you know, whatever. I'm not saying this is some kind of perverted industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. I think it's become more accepted now. And we make, we have fun with it. You know, we have fun. We do. And we're not the only show that does, of course. But you read about some of the tragic lives and experiences of some of the folks who have been involved in the industry, and it just is a word of a warning and caution. And we're going to actually we've been working on this too, establishing a relationship with Avia for a few reasons, to have some fun. And we have a lot of laughs and do have a lot of fun on the show because if we didn't, we wouldn't be doing it. And our audience has said, hey, we love what you guys do, so we're going to continue doing what we do. But we're trying to get some interviews lined up with some participants in that industry to have some fun and have some interesting discussions and find out about their lives and so forth. And stay tuned to the Andy and Amanda show for these discussions as we've had in the past, and we'll continue to do so in the future. And I don't want to, I've been going on too long about that as it is right now. So let's move on. Tell me about what's happening in the UK. What's going on?
Well, I am happy to report that our daily COVID cases are down for a fourth day in a row now. So we had a record of 46,558 about 4 days ago. That's now dropped to 36,389 daily infections. But they're saying that it's too soon to say if we've reached that peaked point and whether it's going to continue dropping. And because, of course, if people hear this news here, they'll be like, oh, great, it's dropping. It's going to be what we want to do. No, people, no. We mustn't do that. We must still play it safe and be very cautious. So they're going to keep an eye on it for the next week or so. The estimated daily growth rate shows signs of a possible slowdown. And so the estimate is that infections are growing at between 4 and 6% a day, down from 4 and 7% last week. So they are saying that national statistics based on swab in the community suggests 1.3% of the population or 1 in 80 people have the virus, up from 1 in 100 the week before. So they're going to keep monitoring this. We need to still be very careful. This is a good sign. Let's just hope now that it's reached that peak and it is going to drop, because they were predicting, as you know, a week or 2 weeks ago that it was going to reach 200,000 cases a day. And that's a scary number, and that's not a number we want to witness right now. So fingers crossed, we stay away from that. Also, you guys have a firm in the US, a clothing company called Lorna Jane. Heard that? Yeah, okay. So you got stores there, and there's stores in Australia and another country, probably somewhere in, I think it's Taiwan, China and Taiwan. So, so this Australian company had been advertising that their active wear, you know, for working out and things like that, was able to stop the spread of COVID. And they had advertised that its clothing used a groundbreaking technology called LJ Shield to prevent the transfer of all pathogens, okay? So it went to court, and the judge said that they were exploiting a lie, basically, and that it was potentially dangerous. And so the owner, Lorna Jane, has accepted the court's ruling and said that she was misled by their supplier to say that, you know, it protected everybody from the pathogens and stuff like that. So unfortunately, she's been fined a whopping $2.6 million for claiming that their clothes prevented COVID. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's quite crazy. Oh, my God. Even to make such a claim would be absolutely absurd.
Somebody who owns a big store like that across multiple countries and makes a huge profit would be looking into her supplier's claims, you know, covering her own back legally as to whether this was of actual truth or not. So,
molecularly impossible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure if that was the case, other companies would be jumping on the bandwagon with, okay, so they can make it. Let's make the same thing and protect everybody from COVID, make millions of dollars. Yeah, so that's naughty. That's not a very good thing at all.
Where are these clothes made?
Don't ask me. Ask China that question.
Oh, China. We have a lot of questions for China.
Don't we, though?
We do.
For those of you who missed our last show, we tried to call the Embassy of China in Washington, and asked them these questions, and they didn't pick up on the last show. We'll see if we can get in somewhere and try that again maybe next week or something. We got to talk to China. We really do. We got to figure out a way to talk to China. We will. And ask
absolutely.
Them. We have so many questions that are piling up. You know, we really do.
Yes, we do.
Really,
cases
really
are backing
do.
Up.
Yeah. And the only thing they've said to us is...
Now my revenge is complete.
That's all I've heard so far.
Oh, bless them. You know, China, you're not our enemy on this show. We have fun with asking you things, but it's only because, you know, you pop up in the news, my darlings, and we're grateful for you listening and joining us, and hopefully you see the funny side of what we're sharing.
Speaking of China, I meant to tell you this on the phone the other day. Speaking of China, our audience, 2% of our audience, 2%, and we're in 22 countries, 2% of our audience is in China now. And that, you know, grew from a few listeners to 2% of a okay number, of a pretty significant, I have to look up at the numbers. Anyway, 2% is in China, no, 10% is in the UK, and 70-some-odd% is in the United States, and the rest is scattered around the world in small numbers and slightly larger numbers.
Yeah.
But let's just have 2% of our audience listening right now in China.
That's very cool.
And I wonder if this is good or bad. I wonder who those people are, that 2%.
Wow, the mind does boggle. You do think about these things, though, don't you? Like, who's really listening?
Who's listening? Know. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Whoever you are, thank you. We appreciate you anyway.
We do. And maybe that's why they didn't answer their phone. Anyway.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Hey, I want to, you know, there's been, in Los Angeles, we have a mask mandate back in place where if you're going indoors, you need to wear a mask. And if you're outdoors, you don't. This was lifted June 15th. And if you're vaccinated, you didn't need to wear a mask anywhere, indoors or outdoors. And didn't need to apply social distancing if you're vaccinated, for all good reasons, because vaccinated people have not been getting ill. A very, 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 very small fraction of the population has been getting ill. Affected, not infected, but affected by COVID, to a point where they're able to say, hey, you know, our numbers were so small, and the beds that were occupied with the coronavirus patients were all but empty, you know, just really going down big time. There were some, obviously, but going down. And then the unvaccinated people blended in with the vaccinated people saying, hey, they won't know the difference, and these people, and vaccinated people can carry the COVID virus and transmit it.
Yes.
They won't be affected by it to any degree. And these unvaccinated people began to become sick, and these people created a catastrophe for everybody who did the right thing and got vaccinated. Now, because of the numbers rising in Los Angeles, they've mandated a mask policy in LA. Now, in a national basis, you know, there's been discussions in the White House. There's been discussions in the White House, and let's take a listen, and we'll talk about this and elaborate further. You know, the White House has been steadfast in their commitment to combat this virus and to stop the killing that it's done. You know, to stop it. And you have to get vaccinated. That's how it happens. And these numbers have to get way, way higher than they are. And for a month about, you know, Biden and staff have just been, you know, hey, the numbers are going the right way. We're starting to open up. And we have been across the country. The last month has been, you know, until recently, has been showing, you know, some real positive things. And then, bam, we are in a very, very bad trajectory because of the people who refuse to get vaccinated. So there's been no national, hey, you know, we got to put the mask, you know, mandate back in nationally, you know, and God forbid what happens to small business if we have to do a lockdown again. But this whole thing is because of these stubborn people these ignorant people who won't get vaccinated. They think it's either their right not to, or they think that they're being injected with a chip that they're going to be followed by the government, or they feel that it's not tested enough. If they don't want to get a vaccine, they don't have to. But these people are the folks that are getting sick and dying. There's many, many YouTube videos up there now from these patients who would not get vaccinated, and they're in the hospital now on ventilators. Listen to what they have to say. Listen to their warnings. Heed their warnings, folks. But let's take let's see what's going on in the White House as far as the discussions are concerned right now. Pretty good so far, huh?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm impressed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Anyway, so so we haven't. Anyway.
Well, you know what they say. You know, there's a lot to be heard when you're silent, you know. Within the sound of silence. Silence speaks and all that.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to work out what it is. Wow.
But anyway, they haven't had any, you know, there's been speculation about the discussions, but have they said anything? We heard it first here on the in the Amanda Show regarding the relevance of what they've had to say. Only on the Andy Amanda Show. We speak the truth.
Yes.
If nothing's going to be said, then we'll just play nothing.
You can make your own interpretation.
Yeah, if they have anything to say, then we'll let you know that too, and we'll play it for you.
I love
it. I thought you'd appreciate that. I thought our listeners
absolutely
would appreciate that. You
know? Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, gosh.
So what else is going on over there, Andy?
Oh, not much.
Nothing. No.
Well, there is a little. Also, a overnight camp here in the United States, in the Midwest. 8-week overnight, you know, sleepaway camp.
Okay.
Some kids started showing some symptoms of COVID infection. They started testing and found 31 campers under the age of 12. And nobody's serious. Nobody's cold-like symptoms. Nothing serious.
Okay.
The kids will be fine, right? Every single one of those 31 has not been vaccinated. There is no vaccine for kids under 12 right now. Or if that vaccine exists in whatever dose, that it's not out there yet. The camp is from kids, I think, 6 to 16, 7, something like that. Some single digit, you know, early age to 16. Kids over 12, every single one of them has been vaccinated, over 12 years old. Not one case of COVID. Not one. Not one.
Whoa, okay.
Mm-hmm. 31 cases for kids under 12.
Yeah. Well, they were they're planning to vaccinate children here, like I mentioned on the previous show, for 12 and over, because kids are now starting to experience the symptoms of COVID. So that's an interesting twist in events, really. I guess it was expected, the more it mutates and things, but wow. Okay.
Pretty cool. And there's a couple of news items, but before I just realized, when I was talking about our guests, because I want to stay tuned, and I want you to stay tuned for their introduction as well. And on the second part of our show, we're going to have our stock day trader, AMC Squeeze, GameStop, and so forth, a guy who's been on the show with great enthusiasm, needless to say, about what he's doing and how his investments has turned out. He's sharing that information and letting everybody know what he has done. And we're not going to give advice out. We're not financial advisors. We're not licensed to do so, nor do we. But we just share experiences, and that's all Lee does on the show. And that'll be the second half of our show. So the second half, we're going to have a guest on speaking about what's going on with AMC and GameStop and so forth, and day trading. And our first guest is going to be talking about the entertainment business, the film business, acting a movie that he just made that's out there now, making some noise. So it's kind of a fun show that we have lined up ahead here.
Absolutely.
And the Amanda Show, yeah.
I've been excited all week for this. Excited.
Cool. Excited, yeah. Isn't it kind of fun? It's kind of fun. Yeah, we have, as Cornell was telling me, I guess, yesterday, Cornell's our our show coordinator, who does, you know, all I do is get behind the mic. I have no idea what happens behind the scenes, folks, to be honest with you, as Amanda and Cornell will attest to. I get their texts. I'm saying, oh, yeah, good idea. Hey, that sounds like fun. That's about all I do, right? I say, oh, yeah, good. And sometimes, you know, Amanda says, here's the kind of questions, here's the kind of conversation. I remember you did this yesterday. I'm going to have with this guest, and I send her back my ideas. Which I don't know if you want to make public.
It did have me laughing a lot, I gotta admit. It's a lot of fun, but yeah, I've been so excited about this and letting everybody know about this show. What a great start to our weekend as well, having this multitude of wonderful people on our show today.
Mm-hmm. It is, and our show, uh-huh. Our number here to ask our guests questions, because we know you don't want to ask us anything, obviously, or talk with us for whatever reason. Don't know why.
Yeah, right.
I feel like that. Our number is 515-605. Yeah, really. 515-605-9888. Give us a call. Get involved. We'll talk about anything you want to talk about. Don't worry about what we're talking about. You know, we you know, things cross our mind. We talk about it. We're unscripted. We're raw. We're unrehearsed. We have no agenda, really. We talk about what's in the news, obviously, but not as news reporters. Just giving our own, you know, comments and 2 cents and, you know, and on the rating for our show. Our rating for our show has been...
They said it had a D-minus rating from the Better Business Bureau. I said, that's not true. It had an A.
That's an A. You know, and that's because...
Thank you, Trevor.
Thank you. Thank you, really. Because you know...
Listen, this is the way it is.
It is. It is.
Well, yes, we agree with you. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Trump.
Yeah. But if you want to get on the program, 515-605-9888. If you have any comments, suggestions, you want to get onto the program via the internet, if you have a headset, microphone, blah, 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 you do so just by sending us an email during the show, andyandamandashow@gmail.com, and we'll have send you a link to join us that way. And we've had guests who have joined us on the internet as well. It works out perfectly fine. We can hear you just like you are on the phone. And we're always open to your ideas, suggestions, comments. We've had some great comments. We're so glad that people have really enjoyed listening to what we do. We've had some real good comments and suggestions, and we're looking forward to receiving yours as well. Again, the email address is andyandamandashow@gmail.com. And,
absolutely.
You know,
we're one big family. Yeah.
We are.
Don't be shy. Come say hello, and we'll give you a shout-out. You know,
we will
send us your name or something in an email, and we'll be like, "Hey, how you doing? Thank you for joining us, and give you a shout out on the show." It's always nice to hear your name.
we'll definitely acknowledge you as a listener. If you just want to, you know, let us know that you've heard the show and what you think, or maybe not what you think, and and
nice.
you know, we're nice. You know, least you can do is be the same.
Yeah. I think we're nice people, Andy. Yeah.
We are nice people. We are. Do you know what I was about to say?
Mm. Hang on. Wait a minute. No. Mm. Sorry. I'll try.
Anyway, here's what... I guess in all seriousness, I really should play the... I like the idea about nothing coming out of the White House, because what you're about to hear is truly nothing coming out of the White House. And tell me if you agree with me after I play it. So here's what we did before is I played you what actually has come out of the White House. Nothing. You know, I can play it again if you want to hear it. I could do that. Or if you actually want to hear the discussion on what is going on behind the scenes, which is really nothing. Do you know how much nothing there is in the news? And that... You know what I mean? There's so much nothing in the news. And if that nothingness was really played, there's discussions, but what actions, what actually has occurred? I mean, so I'm not denouncing every news. Obviously, things happen, changes are made, you know, policies go into effect. There's crimes and good things and bad things that happen that people talk about. But basically, when they talk about, well, this, and this, and there's so much of, well, and, and it culminates in nothing, that if they actually were to play the nothingness that happened, then I think 70% of our news shows would be radio silence. You know, and you heard the first example of that here on the Andy Manor Show. We're going to hear right now what actually is going on at the White House regarding these discussions.
What should be done with masks? Now, it was categorized to me by what West Wing aides that these were for routine discussions. They've been having them every so often in weeks, just in terms of overall policy, health policy in response to the pandemic. But they have taken on a heightened urgency the last couple of weeks as the Delta variant surges across the country. Now, no decision on masks were made. The White House has made clear. They have said that they are deferring to the CDC. They're not interfering. They're going to let the CDC issue the guidelines, and the White House will then support them and push those out. To this point, those guidelines have not changed. Unvaccinated people are to wear masks when they're indoors. Vaccinated people, there's no recommendation that they do so yet. There have been discussions, though, and certainly there will be further talks in the weeks ahead as to whether that could change. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, notably, was asked about this yesterday, and she, though she said nothing was on the horizon, she did not rule out the possibility that there could be a change down the road, even as she was downplaying the nature of these discussions, saying, look, of course, you would want public health officials to consider all options. She said it's not imminent, but this is obviously something that they're watching very carefully here, and it would be, beyond the public health crisis, a real complicated political moment for this president, who just a few weeks ago was declaring our independence from the virus, who still has his administration pushing these vaccines to those hesitant or refusing to get it. And of course, if masks come back and more lockdowns come back, that would damage the economy too. This is something this White House is watching very carefully right now. They know we're at a crucial inflection point.
So you tell me what was said.
Well, I'm still trying to work that out, Andy.
And we have. I want to pick this. Hold on a minute. Hello. Greetings. You're on the show. This is Andy of Andy and Amanda. We have Amanda in the UK, and you are. Hello.
Hello.
They just dropped.
Is it us you're looking for?
Maybe
not.
Anyway, and I want to skip right from that to what? Getting back to what I was saying.
Yes.
What do you conclude outside of nothing from the clip I just played?
Nothing, Andy. Sincerely, nothing.
So now I'm going to play the first thing. Nah, I won't do it. Anyway, the first clip I played was silence because it was basically nothing. You know, the point I'm making here is that, you know, once if you decipher, if you go through all the news and figure out everything, this person said this person said that, what's going on, so much is nothing. You know, and here's the tragedy of that. And this is getting to, I guess, my point, is that so much division has occurred in this country in the past, you know, years, recent years, four years, you know, preceding Joe Biden.
Yeah.
And, you know, the racism discussions, all these things that are happening, and there are things that are being brought to the surface and things that are being given attention that are well deserved to be given that attention. But you wonder how. And I guess really getting back to the big picture, this lie about an election being stolen, about Trump not causing insurrection, all this.
Yeah.
All the conversations and the news reporting regarding that has been really based on people's opinions of really nothing. And there are institutions and organizations that are fact-finding and get to the fact and make changes and do things. And that's what we need to focus on, not, you know, conversations that lead to people believing things that aren't true. But then you go on to thinking a certain way based on the conversation. It really wasn't anything anyway. Anyway, we're gonna try to pick up this call. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway, let me get to this call. Hello there. You're on the Andy Demand. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Greg Christie.
We finally got you. There he goes. How are you doing, Greg? And welcome to the show.
Hey, it's glad to be back. Glad to be on the show today. How you guys doing?
We're doing fine, thank you. We've been doing pretty darn well. Show's still going strong. We picked up more. I know you were on quite a while ago, and
yes, I was.
The show was just picked up. Yes, so much momentum. We're still going strong. We're in 22 countries. We have listeners around the world that are hearing our conversation right now, and the podcast of our show is distributed by iHeartRadio and iTunes and Google and Alexa and Chrome and iTunes and you know, Spotify and on and on and on. So we're really, you know, it's really taken on a life of its own. And, you know, we're still doing it to it. It's so great to have you back on the show. It really is.
Thank Absolutely. You. Thank you. It's great to be back.
Oh, Give bless us, you, sweetheart.
Tell us about what you've been doing. I know you have a new film to talk about and a new project.
Yeah, we just recently got A Ways to Done. It's now available on Amazon Prime. So we hustled real hard, and we're able to get – we're very grateful for the people at Amazon for picking us up, so we're real good there. Since
wow.
Since we last talked, go ahead.
That's fantastic because, you know, we were awaiting the production of that. The last time you were on the show, we heard about it. It was a horror sci-fi movie, and now that it's actually seen the dawn and we have no more awaiting – And I got to say that we're excited to see it. We're excited to see it, Greg. But
yeah,
can you...
I have to tell you, I love the commentary that was made about that. I thought that was great because I'm going to steal it now.
Thank you. But can you give us a brief rundown on what it's about and the character you play, my darling?
Essentially, A Ways to Dawn is it's about a troubled family. They've got little problems, as all families, I think, across America and the world do.
Yeah.
So they're traveling across the country, and they get hijacked by what we'll call a desperate man who was in the science world, worked for the government.
Wow.
And he's actually running from – it's got a kind of a science fiction sort of aspect to it. So he's running from – see this from another dimension, and they come face to face. Yeah, come face to face with the family and our creature, and they are kind of locked in a scenario of who's going to blink first.
You know, I got to admit that sounds like my kind of movie because I'm into that kind of thing, and the whole like knowing that person could come from another dimension in something like a horror movie as well. Can be seen as so freaking cool. But I mean, people generally find the horror genre fascinating. It's always been fascinating to me. There's a huge market for it, and we all sorts of questions arise for the average viewer regarding the roles played within that genre, simply because it takes you to extreme and otherworldly viewing experiences, right? So what attracted you to that role, and how was your experience within that horror aspect of the movie?
Well, you know, I grew up with, you know, watching a lot of horror films and so forth, and I think what attracted to me to the film in general was the possibilities that I've always thought that there are other dimensions that live upon us. I mean, it's real simple. As we hear about people saying that they're visited by aberrations or ghosts, and they walk among us and so forth and so on, and until that can really proven false, because it just can't be. So the idea that it exists is kind of an interesting one, so that we could possibly be visited in various forms surely appeals to me. So there was that aspect of it. It was a great opportunity to work with a childhood kind of idol of mine, Dee Wallace, who did Yeah, and then I also got a chance to work with Malachi, who was actually Courtney Gaines from Children of the Corn. So those were a couple of horror films and in science fantasy that I grew up on, and I was able to work with them. So knowing I could pull them together for the film was it was kind of the added plus for me.
That's exciting. I mean, I grew up with watching Children of the Corn too, so I mean, that's one of the legendary ones that sticks out in my mind. Absolutely incredible. That must have been so exciting for you. Okay, so
It was.
Yeah. Yeah. As an actor, okay, so we know about method acting and drawing on experiences in life to bring the character you play to life and make your role believable. Because of this, do you ever find it hard to switch off from any role that you've played?
Yeah, I mean, there's an aspect of it, sure, because you want to, you know, if you're shooting on a continuous daily basis, you have to maintain that character. It's because, you know, you have to sometimes you're shooting out of sequence. You know, films generally aren't done that you look at a script and we're going to shoot page one to page 150.
Yeah.
They're day, you know, you may start the production and you're on day 30 in essence. And then a week later, you're going back to page two. So you kind of have to understand that character sort of has to continually be there for you to continue to draw upon them so that there's a continuity of character.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know it's complicated, but it's, it gets there. And then,
yeah,
you know,
I was going to say.
What's that?
No, Carrie, I was going to say, yeah, the complication of it all. Please continue, sweetheart.
Yeah, it's, you know, depending upon the, certainly some characters are much greater to, if you'll take a thought of Daniel Day-Lewis in My Left Foot, it took Daniel several months to break away from that because of the depth that he goes through for certain roles. But, you know, you try to realize that you do have other things that are around you, and so you drop some of it. You know, you can't walk home if you're playing a serial killer. You certainly you can't walk home and be juggling knives in the kitchen while your wife or your immediate other is looking at you like, just stay away from it.
Yeah, right? That's kind of scary because, you know,
yeah.
I've watched things like, of course, so many different types of genres and movies, and the question I've just asked you is something that has always been something that pops into my mind when watching a character play a really deep and, you know, specific role that it requires them to capture every essence of that character on screen. And you hear about people in Hollywood, especially Jim Carrey with his role that he had playing, I think it was Jim, and how he had a hard time breaking away from the role that he was playing. And I know that that caused a great stir in Hollywood regarding, you know, his mental health and all that kind of stuff. But anyway,
sure.
I always find it very interesting how deep you have to go to play a role. And I'm absolutely in awe of any actor that can pull off a role so amazingly well that you just get so drawn into the movie and who they are. And then you're just a huge fan.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to look at those actors like Sean Penn's of the world, and you look at Spicoli that he did many years ago, and yet you look at the work he does now, and you see there's these huge changes in him, obviously from the character standpoint, but you look at what he's done, and you wonder what are we getting? Who is this guy really as a human being, as Sean Penn in general, let's say. But, you know, the interesting thing is you're not really playing a genre. So, like, not everybody who plays a serial killer is a serial killer. You have to find what is it within you that will lead you to need the relationship value to the character. So when you're looking at a case of that, it might be something that you draw that as a child you didn't get touched in the kind of way from your mother that you needed. And when I mean that, I mean the gentle stroking of her hand on your arm, that when she said things, all right, and you take that feeling and you would apply it to something that your character is going after. So even though he may be going after like a Ted Bundy and the different actors that have played that, they're looking at approaching the serial killer from a particular need. So it's the need play. It's not so much the circumstance, because what will happen is the script itself, the story that you watch, will unfold and it'll tell you everything that you need to know about it.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's incredible. I find the whole thing fascinating. The other questions we have for you, acting and producing on the same project. Now, this is just sparked up in my mind, okay? That's a really interesting concept and combination. How difficult is that? Can you tell us more about your experience with that?
Well, right now I'm laughing really hard.
I was going to say, I hear you chuckling away there.
It is a very very complicated. I revel at my comrades who are able to do it, and certainly we don't hear any of that. And so you can't really gauge your own ideas based upon them. But I will tell you, in the experiences that I have, there's producing, there's money investing, producing. There's a variety of ways. But when you have dollars that are on the line and you're actually having to turn that off and you're trying to perform, that can be a little bit of a brain, you know what? Because
yeah.
you're watching things around you, and when people stand around and you know,
yeah.
and or they're not prepared and they don't come to the table ready, all that means is that as the clock is clicking, so go dollars. But
yeah.
that just means that you have to dig deep inside yourself, and you have to say, okay, I need to really, you know, dig deep inside my character and block
yeah.
those things out, which in itself is a very challenging thing, because you have to find yourself so immersed in your character that you won't be thinking about stuff like that.
Wow. Yeah, I can imagine the juggle between the two quite a difficult scenario. I mean, I'm just trying to place myself in that situation right now, and I got to tell you, no. Maybe I'm just judging
yeah.
myself too harshly here, but...
No.
Greg, was Wait Till Dawn shot in California here? Was it L.A. Based production? So many movies these days they get the okay to make a movie, and they go up to Canada and film them. Was this a film that was done in California or regionally?
Wait Till Dawn was all shot in California, and specifically it was shot in the L.A. Ventura County area.
Wow.
The Ventura
Terrific.
County. For those who might be unaware of it, Ventura would be kind of just to the north, westerly northern county over from Los Angeles. So we shot a lot of the interior set stuff. We shot in Los Angeles County, and then a lot of the exteriors we shot in Ventura. We were fortunate enough to have the same. I'm gonna drop some stuff here, some sort of like name dropping, but we did a lot of our exteriors in the same time that or in the same place that Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was shot.
Wow!
So,
wow!
It was
wow.
Big thing to walk around in Tarantino's footsteps, or in Leonardo DiCaprio's footsteps, or
oh,
Brad
wow.
Pitt's. Here
you know,
I am plugging there.
I did speaking of Amazon, I was in casted to do a commercial for Amazon Prime that was shot in a place I never heard of before, but in Ventura Farms or something, where evidently a lot of movies and films, it was like all this farmland, and we had it was back the commercial, which I've yet to see, I got to see how they do this, was a Napoleon era commercial where the French, you know, the whole thing and Napoleon outfits and the mm-hmm. horses and carriages. And it was incredible. I hadn't been on set or done anything in a long time, but that was in Ventura. And I just looked at that area and they said, oh, yeah, there's a whole lot of production done here. And I was like, wow, I'm in L.A. and what do I know? You know, you do your thing here.
Yeah,
in L.A.
Yeah, that's very true. There's a lot of micro studios, kind of independent studios mm-hmm. that are actually all over the place. And you'd be surprised when you're watching something, you're thinking, wow, this wasn't shot in L.A. Because, you know, I get, you know, Hollywood, yeah. L.A., that's like the big picture. That's what everybody thinks it's, you know, it's all about. But reality, it's not. It's you know, a lot of the big studios are there, but they, unfortunately, for tax particular reasons, we shoot out of state or out of county and state.
Out of country. Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about, because your involvement both as an actor, producer, writer is phenomenal and unique, and you know, and you've kind of broken through and made some incredible, you know, headway and breakthroughs in a very difficult industry to do so. And you've been very successful, and for that reason alone, it's great to have you on the show as well.
Thanks.
And I mean that in all sincerity. And so can you talk us through, because I know it's come up on the show before with listeners, and we've had people who've written screenplays and people who've written books, and it's, you know, what do we know? We sit here and talk about whatever comes to our mind at that moment. But it's great that people actually know something about what they're talking about. Can you talk us through the process and what, you know, so you have this idea. Do you take an idea to a book? Do you take it to a screenplay? And that's A, B. What happens after you have the book or screenplay? Who do you go to next? How does this become facilitated? Who do you get excited about an idea? How does the idea go from an idea to here's a check and here's a production on Amazon? I mean, my gosh, that's incredible. You've done this. This is amazing. And you know, I want our listeners to know that this is no easy feat what this guy has accomplished here. This is incredible. It's great. Great. Yes,
well,
so go ahead.
Certainly not to discourage young filmmakers and writers and so forth that are out there. Your chances of getting a job becoming a doctor are far greater than they are to make any kind of money, any kind of, whether it is money or fame or notoriety. It's much easier to become a successful doctor or attorney than it is to land some of those things in the entertainment business.
Yeah.
There are thousands upon thousands of, we'll just say, actors, and you can literally 1% of all of those actors that are out there are making an actual living. The rate right now is like your average actor makes about $15,000 a year. Good luck.
Wow. Wow.
So it's a tough record. It truly is. It's very tough. I mean, writing a screenplay or putting a treatment together, there is a certain amount of luck to that. I mean, I would say there's quite a bit of luck to that, because it isn't a patent, you know, well, I'm going to go down to the market and I'm going to be able to pay, you know, $1.25 and get my half gallon of milk. So you don't have a particular place. You get you make connections, you get lucky, you submit to a variety of different places, and maybe somebody sees. So Wait to Dawn, I will use that as an example. I just happen to know Macho from, I just happened to have been in a class that I just happened to have taken, because just as the steps went forward, we talked afterwards. I was interested in financing a film. We had a discussion. I liked the script. We worked on it quite a bit. We sent it through a couple of rewrites, and then we put it together. We hired independent filmmakers, meaning direct cinematographers, sound, editing, etc. We went through a gamut of things, but it was a very fortunate and lucky break for all of us, and that's really what it takes, is the lucky break. So there really is no patent formula. You have to be, more than anything, you have to be aggressive, and you have to not give up attitude.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine. You know, I used to, you know, having done the show for quite some time now, a lot of people know that I was an airline pilot. I used to fly jets for a living, and it was one of my careers. But anyway, a good buddy that I flew with at the time went on to for a very successful career with American Airlines and became a captain and the go-to guy on CNN. His name's Les Aubend. When an aviation accident or incident or crash would happen, like the MAX 8 and so forth, the disappearance of the jet in the Gulf. You know, he's the guy that you saw on CNN. He wrote a novel called Paper Wings, and it had an aviation angle, but it was a detective, edge of your seat, kind of a, you know, kidnapping, murder mystery, and a pilot is involved as one of the characters. And he wrote this book distributed by Amazon and others, and we got to talking one day, and he said, Andy, hey, you know, I was reading the book. I'm saying, let's just make a great you know, a TV series or a movie. And another friend of mine is a bandmate. I had a band for a long time, and that bandmate is a guy who has been very successful as a screenwriter. As a matter of fact, responsible for many of the episodes of a show, TV show called House, of which he got an Emmy Award. His name's Larry Caprow. So I was talking to Larry. Oh yeah, and I was talking to Larry, and you know, Emmy Award winner, screen, you know, full time job with CBS. I forget the Rogue something he was writing recently, but anyway. So we were talking on the phone, and he was, you know, hard to even connect with him, and finally we did, and he said, you know, he got the book, and he says, Andy, you know what? There's a billion people out there with screenplays and ideas, and it is next to impossible. It is what you know, great, you know. He said, look, the book is not for me. It's not anything I would do. Doesn't mean somebody else wouldn't. But he said, what, you know, trying to get this book into something is, you know, it's going to take you a whole lot of time and effort, and good luck. Forget it. Ain't gonna happen.
Well,
and if that were the truth, then nothing would ever materialize. If that were true,
no,
there'd never be a movie.
I agree with you. And which comes to the point of, like, with our film, the horror sci-fi, is how many horror films do you think are thrown out there on an annual basis? There's a ton of them. It just, there has to be, you have to have something in your film that sort of separates it from something else. That's kind of a start, because as he was saying, you know, well, there's a lot of this, there's a ton of that comes out under what your friend's book was about. Now, our was kind of fortunate because, A, it had a couple of things that were locked in. It had a prequel, it had a sequel that was there, it had an idea that wasn't really explored all that much. So there was some room for it being slightly different. But when it came, so it's just, you have to be lucky that somebody sees that there's a little something that's different. And you know what, and I'm not knocking your friend's book by any stretch of the imagination, but unfortunately, there's 10,000 of the same kinds of stories, and to each individual and each story, it sounds really, really, really good. But how does it make a difference? What made House different than any other medical show that was out? There just has to be kind of a twist. Getting our film distributed was tough. I mean, it took literally, it took 2 years to be able to get somebody to pay. And that was a lot of hammering on the phone. I personally, with a couple of my producing partners, were constantly hammering distributors, sales agents, to try to find somebody that would take on the film. I got lucky with the domestic distribution that my agent happened to have put a film together, and she was in contact with a distributor, and fortunately, there's the luck factor. And luck is needed. I mean, the luck factor came in and she said, yeah, I love the film. I want to do something with it. How can we talk? What can we do? Yeah. And it kind of progressed. There, I had better international opportunities faster than I had the domestic. But it's just that you have to. Somebody has to believe in you enough that when they look at it, and that's the thing. You can't, you can't. It's not like putting a shoe on. You cannot count on that. But somebody's there. It takes perseverance, and it takes a lot of effort and fortitude to do it.
Absolutely. I think you've got that strong mindset, haven't you, to just really believe in something, the project that you're working on, and just really push it and move forwards with it. It's incredible.
Cornell Butler's on the line real quick. He chimed in. He's got to go, but I wanted to say hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, Cornell.
Right.
Hey, what's up? How's everybody doing? Greg, thanks for coming on the Andy Romantic Show. I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. Sorry I missed half of the show. You know, thanks for coming on the show. Yo, dude, this show, I told you about your movie, man. I done watched it like 3 times. The Way to Dawn, it was awesome, man.
Wow. I'm excited. It's going to be on my list to watch.
I hope you bought it all the time. I need you to buy it every time you watch it.
I'm going to buy it, man. Just for you, I'm going to buy it at least 4 times.
No.
That
sounds like a plan.
Definitely. Anything for my friend Greg, my brother.
Really appreciate
that. What's up, brother Andy and sister Amanda?
We're doing very good in our little Andy and Amanda Show convent.
We're doing all right. This little bubble we live in, the Andy and Amanda Show, is doing great. Greg, what else? What's in the works right now? What's next? I know you're probably going to be focusing on the show, getting it out there, doing more publicity. Maybe do you try to get on the talk show circuit, on the Jimmy Kimmel type shows? And does that happen now, or how does that happen?
Again, with a lot of fortune and luck, I might get on to something like the Jimmy Kimmel show. Having the opportunity to be on your show is super, and it's much much gratitude from this side on doing that.
You know,
the thing is that you try to, you can't put all your eggs in one basket and be just working on the one thing, because inevitably that does kind of come to an end, and you have to have something prepared to move forward. Right now, as an actor, I've got a couple of police dramas that I've penned in to do. There is also a comedy that I'm just waiting for a phone call to find out, because I've gone through 3 producer sessions on it. So that may come to happen. I can't really discuss the others, only because I'm under an NDA, and for those who don't know what that is, and both of these projects have some pretty well established stars in them, so they don't like to have anything said until certain things happen.
When you see opportunities for acting, do you have an agent do this for you? Do you get Actors Access, which is, folks, a breakdown service one can subscribe to and submit to try to get an audition, like LA Casting, Backstage? I don't know. There's so many of them, I guess. But how does that process work, putting aside the producing of the film? But just as an actor, how do you go about doing that? What's the process?
If I relied on somebody else to make my career for me, it would never happen. So that sort of, yes, I have an agent. Yes, I use Actors Access. And for anybody out there that is thinking of being in the entertainment business as an actor, if you're not on Actors Access, you might as well just continue to watch daytime television.
Hey, Greg, I got a question for you. How did you like working with the amazing film with Master P? I got the hook up too. How was he?
Oh, with Master P?
Yes.
On I hook up too? He is great. He is a great guy. He's very giving. People around him, if you wanted more takes, Master P said, let him shoot that again. Let him do this. Let him do that. I thought, if I get the chance to work with him again, it would be just very thrilling.
Yes, man. That's cool, great, man. I'm a fan of his.
Well, you know, it's like in anything, it's really, at least to me, it's very fascinating to see who people are in real life. Because, you know, reality check here is that we are all kind of captivated by this image that we see, whether on a big screen or television. But you don't really know who those people are, which is the part of when the general public or the people who are out to bash your careers and so forth, they don't know who these people are. And I'll tell you, people like Dee Wallace, people like Courtney, Bruce Davison, I worked with Eric Roberts, Master P, worked with a few different people. You get to see these people in a real life setting, you know, in between takes, you're sitting at the table eating, breaking bread, you're talking. Whether Eric likes this or not, I'll tell you a quick story about that. He loves pizza. So we would go out at times and have pizza. And just think that celebrities, they can't eat because they won't look good on film. Now, that's kind of a general rule to follow.
Yeah.
Because
that's right. Yeah, he was down to earth, man. Remember we were talking when we was at the pizza place?
Absolutely. So you know exactly where I'm going with this, Jack, is that he tell you straight up, his favorite food in the world is pizza. And he'll tell you that he wants extra garlic and extra tomato on his pizza.
Well, that sounds good.
And he's down to earth.
so down to earth. What a great, 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 great guy. But you see, Master P, in his way, is very similar to that. Now, maybe I've been very fortunate that I've worked with some very down-to-earth people, but the reality check on that is there more out there than people, you know, don't believe everything that you read, everything that you hear. These people are good people. You know, they make movies for a living. That's what they do.
Yeah,
hey,
absolutely.
Folks, speaking of movies, entertainment, TV, and film, we have clocks and timelines and schedules, and we have to maintain here before move on with the show. And, Greg, I want to thank you very much for being with us, and I want to get you back on the show. I'd like to invite you on. As a matter of fact, I had this idea while we're talking. It would be so great. I know it's been months and months and months since you've been on, and to check in with us, I guess get in touch with Cornell. You know, reality radio, let's watch, you know, and listen to and talk about what you're doing, what your trials and tribulations are, what your successes are, what you're looking to do, and talk, because there's so many people who have an interest in acting, in entertainment, in film, want to get to know the people behind the scenes. I mean, it's huge, and it's been huge on the show. Whenever you have folks of your caliber and emerging actors and producers on the show, it's always been very good for our numbers, actually. Anyway, we'd love to get you back on. We have to move on now. We're going to bring on our next. We're going to go from the film and entertainment business to the investment day trading and AMC and GameStop with Lee Van Dusen, a special guest, Will Loback, investors. And Greg, if you want to hang in there and be part of that conversation, you don't have to go. You know, you can hang in. I'm not going to kick you off the show
if you want
to hang in.
I actually have another phone call that I do have to take.
Okay.
But I want to say thank you very much, three of you, giving me the opportunity to talk about the film. And I would love to come back again, and we can shoot for a whole bunch of different contexts or conversation or whatever. But
to
shut that guy up, we got to move on.
You got to move on. All right, Greg.
We love you, Greg.
Right.
Thanks for joining us, darling.
Thank you. Bless you all.
Take care.
Thanks for being with us. We'll be in touch for sure. Thank you. Yes, folks, Greg Christie, the film is Wait Till Dawn. And so while we were talking with Greg, I watched the trailer on IMDb, and wow, it looks fabulous. I have not seen it yet. I will. It's been so busy with everything else we're doing. I'm going to see it. I know Cornell has seen it.
We're going to
have Greg back. What it's so cool to get, like, you know, talk to somebody in the movie. You know, we see movies, we watch TV, and to talk to people who are actually doing it, who you see on the big screen, and they join the Andy and Amanda show. It's fabulous. Just as fabulous as the conversations we've been having. What a segue. God, you think I do this for a living? What? Just as fabulous as me. That was good.
I got to run.
You got to admit that was good.
Okay,
go?
My darling.
Yeah. Okay.
It take care.
Bye-bye now,
Cornell.
Sweetheart.
Speak soon.
Definitely.
But, see you now. We'll be in touch, Cornell. Thanks so much, man, for joining us again. That was a good segue. Talking about our next guest, Lee Van Dusen and Will Loback, who Lee has been on the show several times now, talking about the day trading, the stock market, the AMC squeeze, GameStop, and he's had us like our energy and our adrenaline running. This guy is the Mr. Personality of the investment world, and it's so great to have him part of the show. Lee, welcome back.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
It's going.
Woo-hoo, yeah. It's good to be back.
Oh, yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. How are you guys doing today?
Oh, we're doing great. How was Mexico?
Oh, my gosh. It was fantastic. I'm well tanned and burnt.
I'm just a little jealous right now. A little jealous.
I got the margaritas out of the way for the show.
Oh, fantastic. Send one over, darling.
You were in Mexico. Wait, you were in Mexico?
It's a Democrat hoax.
No. Anyway, so how's it going? Let's talk, man. I know you've got a guest with you today who's joining us. Will is on the line, I believe, right?
Yes, so, sir. Nice to meet you both.
Nice to meet you.
Will.
Great to have you on. Yeah, thanks for joining us. Thanks very much for joining
us. Sure.
And let's talk about the subject at hand, and that is what's going on with AMC, GameStop, day trading, the market in general. Liam, we'll turn it over to you.
All right, so I've got my mastermind with me. He's one of my best friends. We grew up our whole lives together. Helped him with just about anything. So I definitely want to hand this over to him and get started with what's going on with AMC, and we've got some really exciting news. And he just kind of wants to we want to break it down so the average person can understand exactly what's going on here. And Will is here to do just that.
That would be very helpful for me.
Whatever my original intentions were in investing in AMC and GameStop, they have changed. I just want to see what Lee will do as a millionaire, since the guy's in Mexico and Las Vegas every other day with a normal work schedule. Every time I call him, and I say, "Where are you?" and he goes, "Oh, I'm in Vegas." Oh, of course you are. All right, well, it's just a place to jump in. See, there's what's happening right now is so mammoth and has been so absolutely misrepresented with good reason. This is the David and Goliath story of our time. Make no mistake about it. You're watching history unfold. The reason you may or may not realize the gravity of that situation is intentional. This is the people versus Wall Street. This stands to be the greatest transfer of wealth in stock market history. It also when I say we pulled back the curtain to see the man pulling the strings, and then we're not stopping until we burn the whole building down and show the whole world the manipulation, the theft, the lies, the human cattle that the average person has become to a very large and powerful section of the United States economy, and those who enable them and look the other way. I have no problem dropping bombshells, such as Ms. Janet Yellen, the head of the United States Department of Treasury. Can anyone please explain to me how she can justify four times her annual salary in speaking fees by hedge funds that she is supposed to be a police officer of? Is that not a conflict of interest? We haven't even gotten started. What happened in 2008 is happening again, and it's happening in front of your very eyes. The only difference is intelligent, capable, and frankly, courageous. Now, I'm a United States Army veteran, 2001 to 2007, and I have not felt this connection to other people since my time in the service. The strength and the unification of what we've been called a million things. We've been called apes. We've been called day traders, which is inaccurate. We've been called meme stalkers. First of all, define meme for me. And then I would like to say, what about momentum investors? How about we're momentum investors? Because so far, all we've done is believe in a company and buy stock in it. And if that breaks the damn system, then maybe the system is the one that's at fault, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
But the strength and the unity here is, it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. I would say you're badass humanitarians, basically. You know, you're doing your thing. You're sticking up for the average Joe who's trying to make it in this world, who gets denied so many opportunities, and it's kept for the, it's seen as kept for the elitists, those in corporations and things like that. So when you see something like this taking place, it is thrilling. It is exciting to see such a shift taking place and changing. I mean, I got to admit, even though I'm not part of it, I don't study it all, having you guys on the show talking about this is thrilling. I got the hairs on the back of my neck, Will, standing up listening to this conversation.
Yeah, they're
on salute right now, saying, "Sergeant, thank you very much."
So this is worldwide. There are, for continuity, we'll call ourselves apes, because that meaning people that invest in these rebellious situations. There are apes around the world, what also was absolutely incredible was there have been so many attempts to break down our group. Now, I'm a psychologist by education and trade, and the psychology that has been applied is is psyops. It's psychological warfare. And in the beginning, the early attempts to divide us through racial terms, man, that broke down real fast. Again, I go back to the military. This situation and the military were the only places I've ever seen where we don't care if you voted for Trump, if you voted for Biden, because all of us are beyond that. We see now that they're absolutely irrelevant.
They're not
who's running the show. It's the poor versus corrupt Wall Street. That's who the fight has always been about, and our eyes are open to that now. It's worldwide, and I'm sorry. I realize I have a tendency to tangent and to keep talking, so I'll stop and wait to make it more of a conversation.
for our listeners, and we've gone over this previously with Lee. We've heard about this GameStop, the hedge funds being selling short. Let's just we've gone over this in the show before, but for folks who are just tuning in now and didn't hear those shows or didn't hear the podcast of those shows, let's just review a quick summary of what this whole thing is about from the beginning.
Let's see if I can do it in 30 seconds.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Because you know the saying, if you can't explain something in 30 seconds, you don't understand it well enough. So let's see if I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the stock market. People may not realize that a stock price is determined by investors' faith in the company. That's all it is. It's a computer algorithm weighs out buying and selling of the stock and tries to make an educated guess about the average person's belief in the company. Well, it's a fair system. You can bet against the company, which is shorting the company, which simply means you're taking a position, you're making a bet that the company will go down in value. Or you can place a long position. In other words, buying stock. You believe that that stock will be worth more money. You're long on the company. You're either short or you're long. Both are necessary in the same way that two teams are necessary to play a basketball game. Okay, there's got to be an opposition. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
However, the difference in what we're dealing with is the stock market is broken up into a series of hierarchies, and toward the top is something known as a market maker.
Let me ask you a quick question. I just want to hold that thought. Don't lose where you're at. I want to step back just a couple of seconds, because what I want to do for our listeners is say, let's say if I just heard you, I would say, well, you can bet against the company. I go to a casino and you bet on red because you think it's going to land on red, or bet on black because whatever. Now, if you bet, that means am I actually investing in a company how's that working? So I'm going to say, hey, I think
this
company's
going to... Well, that's a good question. There's two answers to that, because there's two ways to, quote unquote, bet against the company. An actual bet is called a put. It's an option. See, what they do is they use complicated words to make it sound more complicated than it is. It's a bet.
Yes.
You're betting that the company will decrease in value. That's a put. Another way to say that, that's the derivatives market. It's a bet. It's sports betting is what it is.
Okay. So where do I put my money?
Betting on a horse in a race.
Where do I put my money? If I say this company is out of business, I'll bet $1 million on it. Where do I put that $1 million?
Well, you could either put a put, which is a contract that says if the price falls to this price or lower, you'll be paid. That will expire in the money.
Wow.
And that means you win. And the lower the price goes, the more you win. Or you can do what they're doing, which is intentionally making the company fail. Because make no mistake about it, you're seeing the predatory behavior of intentionally driving a company into bankruptcy, and it isn't the first. Toys R Us was driven out of business. Sears was driven out of business to the point of buying a large amount of shares so that you can place your people on their board to make bad decisions to drive the company under. That's one method. Another is having, let's say, a substantial financial interest in news organizations. I don't know why, allegedly, the word CNBC are coming to mind right now. Motley Fool, which is owned by a hedge fund. Jim Cramer. And all of these names that seem like these authorities on what to do with your money. But it's strange that it always seems to be in their interest what they recommend you do. That they can actually drive a price under. I don't want to talk offhand, because I would need time to look into it. I'd like to sound intelligent on the subject. Came forward with revolutionary medical advancements that were driven out of business by predatory short sellers. These people are they're the bullies of the stock market, and they decide. They decide what happens to our country, to our business, to our economy, to the world economy, you know, in effect. Well, long story short, what happened was at the beginning of the coronavirus pandemic, the government in their let's say they had good intentions of keeping the economy afloat. They gave permissions to an already all-powerful entity within the stock market known as market makers. And, of course, they abused that authority. Their job was never to decide who lives and dies in this business world. And they began shorting these companies into oblivion. The reason is they've always done this. And if a company goes to zero, if they effectively kill a company, they don't have to pay back anything. So they were brazen. They were brazen, and they started doing what some, which is great that it's gaining traction, a phenomenon known as naked shorting, right? Which is counterfeiting. That's the translation of that term, counterfeiting. They're printing shares they know they cannot acquire. The AMC stock has been sold out for months. We've owned the entirety of legitimate shares since probably May. That's been confirmed by the New York Stock Exchange president, by the CEO of the company, by failure to deliver reports. And in 7 months of us fighting this battle, never once, despite all of their campaigns, including the most recent one where they're using the names of the victims of the Las Vegas shooting to as bots on YouTube comments. I mean, it's disgusting. The amount of effort that they, the probably billions of dollars they've spent, today included, to try and scare us away and get us to let go in this great tug of war, they've never once come forward and shown us how our data is wrong. They've never refuted our thesis. They've never argued our point. They have only attempted to emotionally and psychologically manipulate investors because we caught them. We have them by the balls. There's absolutely nothing they can do. Consider the analogy. If you came home and found someone had burglarized your home, and you walked in and you locked the door from the inside and put the key in your pocket, and you're just waiting for the cops to show up, there's nothing that assuming they don't have a gun or anything, you know, there's nothing that they can do. We've locked them in to their illegal behavior. The SEC, who is supposed to be the police of the stock market, and I'm not going to say that they're not involved because I work for the government. I know their practices. They wouldn't comment if they were involved. But at this point, silence is culpability. You need to say something. Yeah. Today alone, 91% of real people using their real money for a better tomorrow was redirected into what are called dark pools. In other words, if we were playing a video game and I had a cheat code turned on to where 91% of your points don't count, and you're still beating me. I don't know what that says. Because we're still winning. Maybe play another game.
Yeah.
So let's. I want to two things. I want to go back to. One is, we were on. I think we first talked about the AMC squeeze 2 or 3 weeks ago, whatever it may have been. And at the time of the show, we pulled it up live on the show, and the stock price was 58. It is now, and I never heard, I didn't even know what it, I don't have, the only thing I'm aware of is Tesla stock, and I don't own any stock, but I own a Tesla, so it's exciting to me what they're doing. So that's as far as my investment career is going. I don't own any stock right now. I think I may have something.
Well, that's a heavily shorted stock, too.
So, yeah, so when we first had AMC, talked to AMC, it was 58, it's now 36.86. So if I had bought stock, let's say I bought 100 shares, which I almost did. I was so excited about it. A couple weeks ago.
Well, you should now. They're on discount.
Yeah, 36.85 right now. So it's and again, I want to say what we said all along. We are not advisors. We're not giving financial information. We're not making any recommendations. We're just and people sharing what their experiences are and what they would be doing and recommending to their friends in everyday life. This is not an investment advisory show because we're not investor licensed to do that. So I want to be clear about that. Okay, now if I bought AMC 2 weeks ago, I would have lost $20 a share. It's now 36.76 or somewhere around there. If I bought today, where am I going to be in 2 weeks? There's no way of knowing that for sure. I mean, of course, it's a, that's why people don't – if everybody was a soothsayer, everybody running to the market and buying, you know, whatever. So there's no way of knowing for sure. We all know that. We all know that. But in terms of the theory, in terms of the theory of what's going on, what's going on with AMC? We're just going to end up.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk about that because we have to be very clear here. And again, as you said, thank you. I'm not a financial advisor. Nothing I say should be considered financial advice, but it is good advice. That there are – this is the most manipulated stock that we're aware of next to GameStop. GameStop and AMC might as well be the same stock. I mean, you can watch their charts. They're identical. The current stock price is absolutely irrelevant. In fact, I don't watch it. I just found out what today's stock price is through you because I don't watch it. And bear in mind, I've made $80,000 in the last 7 months through AMC, and I don't watch it because it's pennies on the dollar. It's meaningless. The reason is it's not real. There's a secondary set of books in which – remember when I just said that 91% of everybody buying stock in AMC today, it didn't count. It was thrown into the void to not count against the buying pressure. Well, the buying pressure alone, a stock is between $5,000 and $6,000. So would you trade a golden ticket worth 5 or 6 G's for 36 bucks? Because sign me up. I'll buy as many as I can. And I did.
And we do.
Now, nobody knows when. Nobody has a crystal ball. However, I can say this. Every single day, more and more information comes out. The SEC is supposedly doing some sort of transparency effort, which refers to the dark pools, on the 28th of the month. There's also an extremely exciting development with GameStop. And bearing in mind, it's the exact same short hedge funds. If one goes down, meaning if a squeeze occurs with GameStop, it's going to occur with all of them because of the process. A squeeze will happen because a market maker or several hedge funds got margin called and liquidated. If you go bankrupt on one credit card, you're bankrupt on all credit cards, essentially. And that's what's going to happen. Yeah. One rocket would ignite the others. No one knows when that's going to happen, but GameStop certainly has something up their sleeve. Their CEO, Ryan Cohen, the founder of Chewy.com, is an absolute brilliant man. And the suspicion and everything points to a crypto-based dividend. If you remember Overstock, this is how Overstock shook loose there. And of course, the naysayers will say, well, but they got sued for that. Yeah, and then they won. They won that lawsuit. So, of course, right, there's no crystal ball. However, nobody should be investing in a stock with expectation to take gains in a day or two. I mean, that's what a day trader does. We're not day traders. We're long on AMC. We believe in this company. Just recently, I wouldn't blame you if you don't know about it because the media only likes to talk about bad things about AMC. But we just acquired two legendary theaters in Los Angeles yesterday. We've had box office records for the last 5 months. I mean, people are tripping over themselves to get back to the theater. Yes. AMC is now hosting live sports events. We did the UFC event with Conor McGregor, and it was sold out at every single location it played.
I understand I understand that the tickets are selling hot at AMC right now for Andy and Amanda show live.
Of course. Streaming is going to put theaters out of business is like thinking that records would put concerts out of business. They're two different things.
Right.
Yeah. Movie theaters are an experience.
GameStop is at might not have known, but GameStop's at 180.36 right now. So is it true that GameStop, you know, everybody's downloading every game, every video, everything you could possibly think. And I said when my kids were little, every Christmas and birthday, a GameStop was on the list to get them the latest, greatest Madden or whatever. And they used the PlayStation and the Xboxes. I mean, GameStop was always on the list. Every time we went to a mall, Dad, GameStop. Yeah. And now – and then since downloading, I found that GameStop was lucky if they could sell three videos. People just get them online. And so they were on the way – correct me if I'm wrong, but they're on the way to bankruptcy. And a bunch of gamers said, no, they're not. And everybody ran and bought all the stock. And bam, like what you said, the belief in the company.
And now let me tell
holistic.
You what they did with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But it wasn't just a cash grab. That's when Ryan Cohen took over. Bearing in mind, remember that he sold Chewy – I think for $3 billion, one of the largest e-commerce sales. The man understands he's a millennial. He understands today's market. And of course, digital, I'm a gamer, and Lee and I have been playing games together our whole lives, dating back to Nintendo, and he's a download a digital game because it's a convenient thing, but I like to physically hold things. I still buy CDs and records. I like to hold and manipulate it, look at it. But anyway, GameStop
Me too.
Took that money, reversed their bankruptcy, and they're now over $1 billion in capital, and they just acquired two distribution centers rivaling Amazon. And what they're doing, aside from digital downloads, because of course that's the way. So what they figured out they can do is by using, I know this is a little bit technical, but by using non-fungible tokens, which is essentially just putting a digital serial number that cannot be faked onto a file, they're going to allow you to trade in digital games too and buy digital games at a discounted price. But that's, they're going beyond that. See, they're filling the void of Toys R Us. If you go to GameStop's website, you'll see that they sell a whole lot more than video games. Legos, crafts, dollhouse stuff, dress-up, plush toys. I mean, they're expanding themselves, and their intention is to be Amazon, but with a customer focus, with a completely revamped business model that is – you know, well, like Ryan Cohen said, you know, the reason they don't put out a lot of press releases is talk is cheap. Watch what we do.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Wow.
This is fabulous. And if you touch back on, you know, the point that Will was making, if you touch back on, you know, if it's at $36 a share or $37 a share right now, the actual share price that has been proven is between $5,000 and $6,000 as it sits right now. So
that's the price that market makers are paying behind the scenes in those dark pools. Now you might ask, well, why wouldn't they pay $37 in the open market? Bearing in mind, they sell in the open market. They sell their own synthetic counterfeit shares in the open market to make the price go down. But when you buy a share, they don't fill that in the open market. Everyone's been hearing about this for order flow. Let me translate that. You go to a restaurant. Your waiter is your broker. Okay, that's for example. Not alleging anything. They do have a legal team. Let's say your waiter's name happens to be Robin, last name Hood, and your waiter takes your order. I'll take 10 hot steaming shares of AMC, sir. Walks it back to the chef. But the chef slips him a $20 bill in his pocket and says, hey, bring me your orders. That's payment for order flow. And then that chef has been spitting in your food.
Nasty.
So let me ask you this. Can I go to Robinhood or whoever, Mark, whoever, my stock person or desk online company, and I bought 100 shares of AMC, I would be paying $36 or whatever a share, right, for my 100 shares, correct?
Correct. Correct.
And then I could sit on it for a year.
For your purposes, they're real shares. Whether they're synthetic or not, to you, they're real.
But
are
they worth anything?
The problem.
Are they worth anything?
Of course. And when the time comes that they all need to be bought back, which, again, everything that we're talking about, we are readily available with peer-reviewed data, reviewed by people with PhDs in economics, by CEOs of large investment groups. Right now, there's this tremendous – the movement has spread to LinkedIn, where professionals with their credentials representing their company are starting to come forward and go, you know what? I know this is a good old boy system, but I'm tired of pretending like this isn't happening. This is disgusting. We all see this happening. The whole world is watching. That's in the financial world is watching this with their jaw on the floor. They've never seen manipulation like this. Well, anyway, our data is extensively reviewed. Again, they've never refuted our data at all. And our data supports a need when the squeeze comes, which is inevitable. Mm-hmm. We don't know when, but it's inevitable, that they'll need to buy back potentially 3 to 4 times the totality of AMC shares. They have to buy back 3 or 4 times the float. They owe back potentially billions of shares. So that $36 share you bought, which if you were to buy that right now, it's completely counterfeit. It's fake. AMC was sold out back in May. But they continued to sell those shares knowing that. because but they it, have so, to.
So if I buy my shares today at $36, next week at 58, can I sell it at 58?
You could. It would be a terrible financial decision, but sure.
No, but
you
I'm saying I could go back to my trader and say, okay, sell my stock, sell it today, and I'd get 58.
Of course, yes.
Okay.
For your purposes, it might as well be a real share. Yes.
Okay. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We have to wind down because we're beyond our time allotment here. Even though we're going to continuing as a podcast right now, but our actual show is about to wind down here. So here's what I'd like to do, because this is a fabulous discussion, and we could go on and on, and I want to devote more time to this. I'd like to take this opportunity to invite both of you guys back on, Lee, of course, and Will. And we'll arrange a date, maybe even next Friday, but we'll talk to Cornell and Amanda. We'll try to make that work whenever you guys can do it. Let's continue this conversation. It's fabulous. What a discussion. I mean, this is enlightening. I think this is important. I think it's a very important discussion to have and to get out there, more so some a lot of the other topics that we've been covering on the show, which are also, from social reasons, important, of course. But this is fabulous, and this is something
everybody
and their mother and brother and sister and kid can get involved in and be part of, and I think it's an important discussion to have, and what an enlightening conversation this is and has been. So I want to continue it, and if we can make that happen again.
If I may, just very briefly,
go ahead.
I want to thank you both, because at a time right now where information is being distorted, there are beacons of hope, and I believe that the technology that has enabled this revolution to rise and for wrongs to be righted, and voices like yours to come forward and listen to people.
Absolutely.
I think you're on the right side of history, and I'm really grateful that you gave us this platform to tell our story.
Oh, thank you, because we feel exactly the same way. We're very passionate about, setting things right in the world, and I'm a very deep individual like yourself, and is very deep in that sense too, believes in humanity, passionate about it all. So it's amazing to have you back and express more on this, because we do believe in helping any situation to progress and better humanity in whatever way we can.
That's what we do here.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. All right, folks. So we got a roll. We're going to, it's been a great week altogether here on the Andy and Emmanuel Show. Monday, we're trying something that we've never done before in a year and a half of doing the show, and that is I'm going to be calling in remotely from Michigan, and Amanda, of course, will be in the UK. I will be in Michigan Monday, and we'll be doing the show from, as opposed to Hollywood, we'll be doing it from Michigan and the UK, and I'll be calling in remotely, and we're gonna try this. We're at our scheduled time, which is, I guess, noon Eastern Daylight Time, and at 5 p.m. In the UK. So stay tuned for that show. On Monday, we're going to be addressing a bunch of topics. Of course, whatever happened in the news over the weekend, we'll be addressing that, plus some other things we wanted to touch upon that we've been talking about this week. And I want to take the opportunity again to invite both Lee Van Dusen and Will Loback back on the show. I can't commit to a date here, but I'd like to, invite you back next Friday, but we'll talk about that. Thanks so much for joining us.
It'd be a pleasure.
This has been wonderful. And those of you who
listen
to this, enlightening. And a lot of our listeners across many, many platforms hear this as a podcast around the world, including our new 2% listener share in China. So hope you're learning something about what we're doing over here. Hey, guys, real quick, we tried to call the Chinese embassy on Wednesday's show to see if they were cyber attacking our country, but they wouldn't answer the phone. Anyway, we did try.
We did. We really did.
We were going to ask them point blank.
I bet you did.
I don't know anything about what you're
one
even talking about.
At a time.
So anyway, that maybe we'll try that again next week. But anyway, folks, thanks for listening. Amanda, take us home. Thank you again. Lee Van Dusen, Will Loback, Greg Christie. It's been a wonderful show, and we'll see you guys next week. Have a great weekend. Amanda, take us on home.
Okay, so on behalf of Andy Kimball in California, Hollywood, and myself, Amanda Love, here in the UK, again, thanks to Greg, Will, and Lee. We love you guys. Thanks to all our listeners for tuning in, and join us again on Monday's show. Have an amazing weekend. Take care. Keep smiling. Do the right thing.
Bye-bye now.
Have fun. Oh, invest.
Bye, guys.